welcome to the Propelling Performance podcast. In each episode, we bring you an in-depth interview with business experts and leaders. They share their insights and experiences to help founders, owners, and leaders drive the performance, growth, and valuation of their mid-tier businesses. Now let's hear from our host, business coach, speaker, and author, Rob Nankervis.
Welcome to the Propelling Performance podcast. I'm delighted to have as my guest today, Darren Finkelstein. Darren is an accountability coach, business advisor, mentor, author, and speaker. He works with high-performing individuals and teams to get results, achieve their dreams, and smash their goals, leveraging over 30 years of experience both in the corporate world and in small business. Darren is himself a successful entrepreneur. He built a wonderful lifestyle business, which he successfully sold and exited after 15 years. Before all this, Darren worked for Apple for 10 years as manager of commercial markets during the inspirational Steve Jobs era and was awarded the prestigious Golden Apple Award during his time there. He's certainly a guy who knows how to get stuff done. Darren, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hey, Rob, thank you for inviting me. Lovely to be here.
Darren, you've been a leader and a business owner. What struck you about accountability to make it the focus through your most recent book, The Accountability Advantage?
Accountability, hey, it's that dreaded A word, I call it. Some people don't know how to spell it correctly, and most of the others don't really know what it means. And we often, as individuals, I think, hear about accountability and focus on it in bad connotations. You know, it's the politician who makes a promise that says they're going to do something and they don't ever do it, and their constituents and the press hold them accountable for that. Or a sports star has been inappropriate yet again and done the wrong thing, and now they're being dragged across the front of the newspapers, because accountability for some people is kind of like putting your head on a plate. We want to see that person, the perpetrator, you know, stopped. And so accountability has really negative connotations to most people, but it's such a superpower if we can just turn it around and use it to our advantage.
Because it's interesting, you know, I read in your book about this sort of held as the big stick in the sense, or the guilt piece, and it's such a negative connotation to it. But it's interesting that a number of the leaders who speak with me mention this whole challenge of accountability within their business. Why do you think it's proven to be so intractable?
Oh, Rob, I think that it's not hard to be accountable, and it's actually a really cost-effective way of getting results. You know, you don't have to go and hire a whole group of people to do this exercise. It's something so easily achieved, and it just takes a bit of focus. But the things you can achieve by being held accountable are extraordinary. You know, it's business. It works. It's your personal life. You can, you know, lose a few pounds if you wanted to do that by having someone hold you accountable. You could, you know, chop your golf handicap, and there's so many ways it can be adaptable to our lives, not just our businesses.
So any stories, perhaps, of the where it's worked, the where it hasn't, that spring to mind?
Yeah, look, Rob, I go back to my time at Apple, and in those days, so we're back in the sort of late 90s. BHP was the biggest company in Australia in those days, and I was responsible for the BHP account at Apple. And I had a situation evolve and transpire that really showed accountability starts at the top, even at organisations like Apple. It started at the top, and when you're not held accountable, the wheels just fall off and plans go to pieces. I was responsible for the BHP account, and I had the opportunity of hosting the worldwide director of sales for Apple, who came to Australia and Apple and wanted to go out and see some big clients. So we wheeled him into the biggest client we had, which was the BHP account. And as a really good account manager prior to that, I had written what I call a MAPE document, a major account planning event document. And I circulated that to all the stakeholders to talk about BHP's direction, their strategies, what are the things that we would need to cover off in that meeting with our worldwide director of sales, what are the key issues and stakeholder issues that were there surrounding the account that we could turn around and really cement our place in there as a supplier, proud supplier of BHP. And Rob, the document said BHP must comfortably use its Microsoft range of products. And that was what we needed to do. And the Worldwide Director of Sales, your one job you had to do in this meeting was to say how we work, Apple's working closely with Microsoft. And I thought that was pretty straightforward, circulated it to all and sundry in a really well-presented report, briefed everybody beforehand and thought all he had to do was one job. And we're sitting in that meeting with the team from BHP and BHP House in those days, a top end of Collins Street in the city of Melbourne. And the worldwide director of sales leans back in his chair, kind of puts his hands behind his neck, and he pulls out of his briefcase in those days, which was rested on his lap, a fax, and he's proceeded to announce the arrival of this fax to the team from BHP. I've got this wonderful fax here from Bill. We're all thinking Bill, and it was Bill Gates. So we're talking at a really high level here. This fax comes out from Bill Gates, and I'm thinking to myself, you have one job to do here, okay? One job is to go and tell BHP that we love Microsoft and we're working with them and everybody's going to be sweet. We're all holding hands, the same table. And he pulls out this fax, Rob, and this fax says Microsoft suing Apple. And he said it so proudly. You had one job to do. And he lacked total accountability in that. Right up front, he had a job to do that he said he was going to do. He agreed to do it, and he didn't do it. And we lost that account. And that's when accountability goes off the rails. Accountability starts at the top of an organisation, and even at the worldwide director of sales has a responsibility to somebody. See, we're responsible for things, Rob, and we're accountable to people. And he was accountable to nobody, sadly, and we lost the account. And that's when accountability goes off the rails.
Yeah.
That's my story.
Wow.
Wrote about that, all the drama that went with it in my book, and talk about how you know, a lack of accountability in an individual can really cause major problems. And when you aren't held accountable, and you think you're above above accountability, and you want to go and do things your own way, in your own time, in your own pace, a la that worldwide sales director for Apple, that's just you've got to communicate that down to everybody. We've all got to be on the same team, singing off the same song sheet.
Yeah, so that's a good segue, actually, Darren, into my next question, which is what are the signs of a lack of accountability? Because sometimes there'll obviously be some kind of hints that it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, there are. And they weren't apparent with this worldwide director of sales, let me tell you. I've run this over in my head a million times. But there's typically seven things, Rob, that I've found in dealing with successful individuals, business owners and entrepreneurs that really stop people from being accountable or getting stuff done, basically. And the first one is a sense of overwhelm. The second one is a sense of being too ambitious. The third is not having a plan at all. The fourth is having past problems, coming into an exercise with some bad memories and bad habits along the way. The fifth is not knowing where to start that exercise. The sixth is people don't have enough reason to want to be able to get a task done, don't understand how they fit into the end solution. And seventh is that no one cares. There's no one out there to hold them to account. Rob, should we go through each one of these?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That'd be helpful.
Yeah, no problem at all. So in terms of overwhelm, I think this is one that most people tend to suffer from and feel like they just don't know where to start. They've got so much going on in their head. And they've got too many things to focus on to really give them to give them the attention to that one thing that yells at them the loudest, because there's all these voices of things screaming out to them at once. The solutions I often find for that, Rob, is to write that down and take the overwhelm out of your head and kind of stick it on a piece of paper and really try and distance yourself from it. Breaking it down into small chunks is always really helpful. Let's just not worry about step 10. Let's just go to step one. What's the first thing we can do? And quite often, starting with the easiest thing is the best. We want to get a bit of success. We want to build our self-belief and feel confident about ourselves. So starting with the easiest task first is often a really good way to break that down. Choosing tasks carefully, is really key. Which are the tasks that you want to do, you're interested in doing, you are looking forward to doing, is always really important. In terms of our, second reason, overambition, quite often happens because we can't say no. You know, we try to get too much done in a really unrealistic time frame. So often we just need to say no more often because someone else's priority isn't always our priority. And trying to share those tasks with others is often the key. Getting other people involved who have a expertise or who have an interest in a particular area works really well. Rob, sometimes people have no plan at all. So the old saying, you fail to plan means you plan to fail, is really spot on. And really making sure that you break those tasks down into a small plan and put some times on it, realistic times on it, dates when you think you can get stuff done, looking at your current workload, looking at your current set of commitments that you've made, and coming up with a way of really deconstructing the end result you want to achieve and breaking it down into small bite-sized chunks.
There's such a correlation, really, isn't there, between those first three around the value of the plan, because if you can spread it out and see how all the pieces fit together, and normally with my client base, it's going from the really long term kind of Mount Everest view, what we'd often call a BHAG, and you also referred in your book to BHAGs, yep, like this 10 plus year view, and then breaking that down into a 3 year view, 1 year view. What does that mean for the quarter? And then people tend to do these 1 or 2 week sprints for each part of the quarter. Yeah. Gives them such clarity and alignment about how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. And also a shared commitment, I find, in terms of what you will or won't do, and actually gives permission to have those conversations about, well, what do we have to stop doing? Which really goes to your point about, are we being too ambitious and do we need to say no to more things and so on?
Yeah, and quite often people don't feel like, they don't see the connection with what they're doing with the overall project. And I talked about that a bit in point number six, and that was you don't have a big enough reason. If you know that what your little task is, task is part of a bigger plan, it's part of a quarterly objective which fits into our annual focus, you get to see the role that just little old you as an individual gets to play. And if you can take that role on and do it to the best of your ability and meet your deadline, and others in the team can do the same, just worry about and focus on their keeping their end of the jigsaw together, and their piece, putting it in the right spot, then you're going to end up with this wonderful group of people who have all worked together with the same end goal. They understand the big reason at the end. They understand the why about this project.
No, absolutely. And this sense of this, if you like, shared vision, coming together around what the strategy is and how those parts of it fit together. And I tend to ask people, what are the needle movers here? Is this thing that you're talking about doing actually going to make a difference? Is this, and even if it does it have to be done now? And so that people get this idea of how those pieces of the puzzle should fit together. And I remember a couple of years ago I did an exercise for a leadership team because the CEO had said, look, I reckon we're overwhelmed here, to go to your first point, because they had about 130 projects. And he said, look, he'd come out of corporate and they had a handful of projects. So he was concerned this new team he'd moved into were kind of overcommitting with what they were going to get done. And when we mapped it out all on a big wall chart, I set up butcher's paper across the wall, and we mapped out where all these things would fit according to the team, what they realised is that a huge number of them were stacked into the next 6 months. And they all realised, I mean, this was just not going to happen. Because they hadn't paced and spaced things out the right way. There were things at odds with each other in terms of resourcing and, the precedence of things in the project planning. And so they were much more able after that, to having visualised it, to, you know, kill some things out of the plan, spread things out more sensibly, and so on.
Because as people, right, we're used to just responding to the thing that screams the most. The squeakiest cog is getting all the oil, you know, that our attention goes to solving those problems immediately, putting out the fire, instead of looking at what the overall objective is and breaking it down into those bite-sized chunks we talked about, and putting timelines with them and deliverable timelines based upon our schedule, where we're at the moment. Are we able to achieve this by that date? And if we know that we're not going to be able to achieve it, we've got a couple of choices. We need to bring in more resources and make it happen. We need to reprioritize, or we need to just push back on it and say, no, I can't do that now because of this, which is more important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the traps probably for leaders, particularly the ones that have come out of functional roles, is there is this attraction to maybe do the operational fix or something like that. They get a little adrenaline hit out of the win that they get from having done that particular task, albeit that might have distracted them from the thing that was actually on their priority list that they really needed to be doing, even if it was only a small step as part of a bigger objective.
Because we all put off, you know, we all put off the doing the stuff that we don't really like doing till the end because it's not going to give us much pleasure. So if we can identify that stuff right up front, and quite often, you know, we, as human beings, you sit down and eat a meal, right? You quite often eat the thing that, you enjoy tasting the most, you eat that first. But if we can spin those things around, and look at being able to get those tasks done that are going to involve the most amount of work, get them done earlier because we're the freshest, we're just begun, we're building up some momentum. Give yourself a little win at the beginning so you get yourself that self-belief and you feel really good about the purpose that that you're on. Being able to get those tasks done, the easy ones done at the beginning, and then mix them up with the hard ones is a really nice way to do the exercise.
And I wonder, Darren, if this sort of leads on to the fourth issue you were talking about, people having past problems. I suspect that some of the problems they have are because they haven't done what you're suggesting here in terms of spacing things, pacing them, busting the things into small bite-sized components and so on. So inevitably do have some of the problems.
Yeah, because one of the steps of accountability we can talk about is reviewing what you've done, what's worked in the past and what hasn't. And so, you know, when you've got past problems, we quite often people don't review as much as they should about something that's worked in the past or hasn't worked in the past. Review it all. Review what's the positive and the negative stuff. It's as important as each other. And learn from that. Because you'll just go and do tomorrow, you know, doing tomorrow what you did today is a bad cycle that you need to break. It's not going to get any better if you don't change what you've done. So I bring with me on this current task the stuff that I did wrong last time because I've not reviewed it. I've not reviewed it in the positive or the negative and been able to implement that for this time.
Yeah, one of the things I've been implementing with clients is this idea of reviewing at least quarterly, you know, what have been some of the highlights and some of the challenges and learnings of the past 90 days.
Yeah.
And so this idea of accelerating learning cycles, having people reflect on the things that have gone well, the things that didn't go so well, so there's a more frequent opportunity to change the trajectory of what they're doing.
Yeah. And it's the frequency of those reviews that are going to make the difference to people. It's the frequency of those reviews coupled with the fact that you've got someone who's doing the review that actually follows up on this stuff. So if one of your action items was to review the completion of a past project, whether it was a positive or negative end, if you know that you're going to do that review next Friday, then you're going to go and prepare for that review. And you should do those reviews really closely to when you did that task, so it's still fresh in your mind.
Yeah, well, I use the sports team analogy quite a bit, and I say, well, you know, you look at, say, an AFL football team. They're reviewing as they go through the game, and specifically they're reviewing each quarter. They're not waiting till the end of the season to say, oh, gee, we didn't play game three terribly well.
No, correct. Exactly. But people just don't even do reviews. So getting some sort of frequency into this exercise is really important. And having a date for a review, having a date in which you're going to have someone who's holding you account meet with you, means that you would have done some planning and preparation in advance. It's not out of the blue, so there's no excuse for not knowing or being prepared. Because what we want to ultimately do with this, Rob, is to remove things like excuses, blame, finger pointing. I didn't do that because he did it, or she did it wrong. I was waiting on them and they never did it. You know, we want to take responsibility for this action, and we want to make sure that this action is completed to the best of our ability.
Yeah, the other thing I find about this too, Darren, is that the near-to-time review and reflection tend to mean that an issue hasn't got out of control by the time you're talking about it. You know, it's like when something's gone really bad and it's being talked about months later, well, everyone wants to avoid it like the plague. But whereas typically if you're talking about these things every, you know, week, 2 weeks, you know, every few weeks with a one-on-one with a mentor, coach, boss, whatever it is. Normally things haven't diverted too far by that moment, and the conversation isn't as difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. You can make those minor directional changes as you go rather than make a bloody big change at the end because you haven't followed up in the process. But, you know, when I was writing my book, I realised that that there were some amazing studies that have been done on obligations and promises and surrounding probabilities of achieving goals. And let me explain to you a study that I talked about in my book, a study done back in 2010 by the American Society of Training and Development over there in the US. And the study was undertaken on the probability of completing a goal. And they said that if you have a goal or an idea, just by the notion of having that goal or an idea, you have a 10% probability of completing it, which is not a bad start when all you've got is really, oh, the thought is, oh, I'm going to, you know, I want to lose a few kilos, perhaps something as simple as that. And that probability increases to 25% if you consciously decide you will do it. So typically, if that task is aligned to your why, it's aligned to your purpose, your goal, who you are, you know, there's nothing better than having that item in your KPIs to motivate you towards wanting to complete that task. Your probability goes to 40% when you decide you will do it. So if you can put a date on there when you'll have that done, your probability increases dramatically. It goes to 50% if you plan on how you'll do it. So, yes, I want to lose a few kilos. So, for example, I'm going to, do some exercise every day. I'm not going to I'm not going to drink booze on weekdays. I'm only going to do that on weekends. Perhaps I'm not going to eat bread, you know, all that sort of stuff. Just by understanding what are the things you need to do to complete it, your probability goes to 50%. It increases to 65% if you commit to somebody you're going to do it. So whether that be to your manager, to your colleague, to your coach, to your mentor, you commit to somebody you're going to do it. Now, that probability goes to 65% to that. If you can commit to more people than just one, the broader the commitment, the broader it's gone out to more people, the more inclined you'll be to do it. Because as humans, right, we don't want to let down other people. It's like, I plan to be on this your podcast guest today at a certain time. I've made a commitment to you to do that, and I'm going to go there and fulfill that commitment because I, you know, a professional guy, I love your podcast, want to be part of it. I'm not going to let you down. I'm not going to let myself down. I've got credibility here. And so by sharing the goal with other people, puts it out there in the open. Quite a lot of people don't share their goals, don't share their task with others because their fear of failure overcomes the notion to want to share it. So they think, I'm not going to tell others that I'm going to commit to doing this task because if I don't do it, then they won't know. And so that works really against all of us. If we can go out there and commit to people, tell it, shout it from the top of buildings that we've committed to a task, you are going to have more people out there wanting to support you, wanting to check up on you. It's like you writing your book, Rob. You said to people when you were writing your book that you were doing that exercise. And along the way, people that you told would ring you up, send you a text, go, hey, Rob, how's that book going, mate? And they would share that. They would share that. They're holding you to account for that book because you said you were going to do it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, actually, in the team reviews that I facilitate, we do, as well as reviewing live around the executive table, whether people got, green, done, orange, almost done, yep, or red, not done, in front of their peers, we also set the priorities individually for the coming quarter. So yep, there's this sense of commitment that they've made across not just to their boss, but they've made a commitment to their peers.
Yes.
And so in terms of meshing them in to be on the hook for getting something done, they're well and truly on the hook because then their peers can call it out
correct,
as well as just their boss. So,
and their peers want you to be successful, right? They're going to check in on you by just going, how's it going, mate? How'd you go with that? Where are you up to? How's it doing, buddy? All that sort of stuff. That's encouragement. And people want you to be successful. But, we're talking about these probability percentages. The probability goes to 95%. And they found in the study, if you have a specific accountability with an appointment with a person you've committed to, so if you're going to have those frequent, specific check-ins with somebody, you knew that was going to happen every week, and that person you're checking in with is on top of their game. They're keeping you accountable for the things you say you are. You're working off a list that you both share of those particular items. We both agree on them. We've committed to doing them. We put a dates down that are locked in a place. We're really focused on that. Then you do all of those things. Your probability is 95% of hitting your goal. And so you're just about there. But it all hinges on the fact is of someone holding you to account for that exercise. Because you could have the world's best plan, and if you don't implement and you don't execute, that world's best plan is wasted.
Yeah. So does this play a bit into your number five about people's challenge about where do you start?
It does, because starting is the thing. It's just where procrastination kicks in, and is procrastination is probably the biggest killer of self-belief there is. And so the best place to start is to find something, that little first step you can take to set you off in the direction of this goal of this task that you want to achieve. We need to build some momentum. We need to get ourselves in a routine of feeling positive about this. We're looking forward to doing this exercise. And so find yourself something that's going to give you an instant win. We want to win. We want to keep that momentum happening. And typically, if you know where to start the exercise, then the procrastination gets pushed aside. It's just procrastination doesn't even get a chance to raise its ugly head because you bypass that because you're off and running.
And that probably feeds then sort of, in a sense, points 6 and 7 you raised about, people don't actually have a reason to get something done and that yep. no one else cares about it either.
Yeah, well, and you don't have a big enough reason because you haven't shared the project with enough people. Share this stuff. Talk about it. Make sure it's aligned. Make sure it's aligned to your job description. If it's a task related to work, make sure you take it on because it fits with your role and where your direction is headed. Don't take on those tasks where it's actually going to sidetrack you because that's just going to, take your mind away from your doing what's important to you and your team. You need to be really focused on this. And we often find that in organisations, the reason isn't clearly shared with everybody and it's on a need-to-know basis and it doesn't go down to all levels. Particularly I used to find that when I was at Apple, jobs in the executive team would make decisions and even though I had a role with responsibility, I wouldn't hear of those. I'd be drip fed this information. So you've got to be able to have faith in your management and have and be aligned to where management want it to take the business, and be invested in that, be committed to that enables you to find enough reason in it to want to stay connected to that task.
Yeah, I must say the teams where I've seen the greatest success, Darren, is where we've managed to harness some talk around what these kind of, if you like, strategic pillars are that are going to guide them over the next 3 years. What's their purpose? What are their values? What's their brand promise to the customer, and so on? And so we provide all these things in the coaching work that I do to try and give leaders hooks so that when they're driving the priorities through the organisation and getting people to be accountable for different pieces of it, they've got plenty of anchor points for the team to connect with in terms of that reason for why we're doing X or Y.
Yeah. And so for management, it's their role to make sure that everybody understands their reason and understands that their reason is and makes them feel their reason is big enough for them to want to stay invested in it. It's hard sometimes to keep focus on the end goal when you're not really sure what the end goal is. And you also may not agree with that end goal. You might have a clear understanding of what it is, but you may not be aligned with it.
No, and look, we tend to have a piece in our work which says you might disagree, but it's disagree and commit. Because if the organisation has decided that the train is heading in a certain direction and we've gone through the exercise of working out that that's what needs to be done, it might not be the case that everyone will be on board with that, but, if the tribe has spoken and that's what we're doing.
That's
what we're doing. And if you have a big enough disconnect with that, you probably need to work out whether you really should be working there anymore.
Absolutely. But if you don't have... If you don't get that big enough reason, then you're not going to find the hook that's going to keep you connected with it.
Yeah, so the way I describe it to the leaders that I coach is that even if not everyone agrees with the decisions you've made, they should be able to see how you've got to it.
Yeah.
As in we wanted to reach into this particular market or we needed to provide these sort of products to our customers and so on. And it's a case then of people think, oh, okay, well, I wouldn't have gone into market X, I would have gone into market Z, but I can understand how the CEO's got to this point.
Yes.
So the no one cares, I guess, is your seventh thing is an interesting one. I suppose you've got to ask yourself if just nobody cares, should I care?
Yeah, 100%.
Are we on the wrong task? Should we be doing this at all?
Absolutely, but sometimes there's tasks you get that you can't really choose. So it's on the table. We just need to care. Make yourself care. When we talk about no one cares, we're talking about it's sharing it with other people, and we're talking about that in the context of having someone that you can sit down with, preferably, ideally, on a weekly basis to just check in on your progress towards all of these tasks. And to make sure that someone's there to, you know, provide you with some clarity, provide you with being a sounding block to you know, debate with you on these issues, and for someone there to listen. And I think all those are really important. And if you can get someone who does that with you and makes you feel like you're being heard and they're keeping you on the right track, then the results you can achieve is extraordinary. You know, we've all got that accountability as a superpower that we talked about. We've all got that inside. And being truly accountable means you can do the things you're going to say you're going to do and get your team to do the same. And if we're all doing the things we've committed to, we're going to find ourselves much more successful at what we do.
So, you know, talking through these seven things and so on, Darren, I mean, look, it obviously sounds very sensible, very doable, but in practice, though, you know, what's getting in the way for people in starting? Because if you did these things, there's no doubt you'd be successful. So is there a sense of this fear of failure, difficulty following through? You know, we start one of these behaviours or disciplines and then it drifts off. What do you see?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and there's not one shoe that fits all feet. There are so many different reasons as to what stops one person moving forward. You know, we talked about the sense of overwhelm and really not knowing where to start, so therefore you don't start. You know, people don't start also because they're not that confident they can finish, and so they don't want to have that sense of failure. And you know, for an accountability coach to sit there and really understand those things first is really key. It's really understanding how people function. You know, how are you going to perform best, Rob, to do those tasks you need to do? How's Rob, will you understand what accountability means? How does that apply to your organisation? How does it apply to you? Is accountability a word you understand the meaning of? Is your only understanding of accountability is when when the politician doesn't deliver what he's supposed to in his 100 days? It's really understanding how people view these components first to know how they best are going to function, and then we work with them one on one to get them through those tasks.
I'd also wonder, Darren, whether there's a certain part of this that is cultural, isn't it? Because, you know, the single individual perhaps being accountable to their boss or being self-motivated to drive towards their priorities and so on is one thing. But institutionalizing this as a discipline for a team is presumably where the main grip comes from in doing this, because it creates for them and presumably for the people that work around them this kind of culture of accountability that we're a get stuff done organization.
Yeah, it is. And businesses of today are aware they need to be adaptable. They are aware they need to be flexible. Are they aware that the game is changing all the time? And the ways that worked in the past may not be the ways, and more than likely aren't the ways that are working now. And it's those organisations that are going to embrace that they're going to see the accountability superpower component that I talked about earlier. They're going to see that rather than seeing accountability as a negative thing, and rather than the connotations that that brings. Because I often find, and it's really quite simply, the reason why most organisations don't introduce accountability is because they truly don't understand what it means. Somewhere along the line, they've heard the A word from somebody in a hallway in a meeting, and they believe they need to incorporate it, but they don't actually understand how you implement accountability in an organisation. It's really as simple as sitting down and finding a buddy, finding a partner, and agreeing to meet them at a certain time every week. That's where it starts. What do you got this week planned, Rob? So where exactly are you at now with that task? Where do you want to be with the task? What's stopping you from getting there? You know, how do you want to get there? and you know, why it's so important that you get there. So I get to understand what's your motivating factor. They're the simple five sort of questions you want one person can have with another. It can make a world of difference.
And I guess the beauty of this too is that this doesn't have to be a boss to direct report type of conversation. This could be, any set of peers effectively peer coaching each other, some sort of buddy system and so on. Yeah. It's just asking those sorts of questions, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know what's really interesting is it's you're better off not having someone aligned to your organisation, to be perfectly honest. You're better off having a buddy who's someone's outside your organisation because they bring a different set of perspectives. They're not looking at through the similar set of glasses as you. And quite often, if we can sort of separate ourselves and remove ourselves emotionally from the situation, getting a fresh set of eyes makes a world of difference. I'm finding that your old uni class that you still knock around with, some of those people are forming accountability groups with each other in different businesses. But, you know, you trust somebody, you respect them, you believe that you're aligned with similar thinking. They're the sort of people that you want to hook yourself up with.
Yeah, that's great advice. So any other thoughts in terms of making this new discipline of accountability stick? Are there tech tools? Are there timings you find better than others?
So in terms of tech tools with it, I often have this conversation with my clients and I write about it in the book. To be really honest with you, it doesn't matter. Whatever the tool is that you feel comfortable that's going to help you through, if you're a person that loves good old-fashioned checklists and, you know, writing notes and sticking them on your wall with butcher's paper, do it. If that's what works for you, absolutely do it. If you're the other sort of person that wants to have it cloud-based and you want to be able to access it 24/7 from 15 million devices and they're all hooked up together, that's fine. Whatever the process is, do it. The end of the day, what we want you to be able to do is commit to those things you said you're going to commit to, and get others to do the same. And so if it means you recording those action items, those checklists, those to-do lists, call it whatever you like, whatever it means of writing those down and putting a date next to them, as long as that date's in your diary and it's, you know, and you're looking at your diary on a regular basis so you've got no excuse for missing that appointment or missing that commitment, then use that method.
Yeah, I must say one of the things that I've found both with myself, I mean, I've got my plan stuck right next to my computer screen on the wall here.
So you've written it on a piece of paper.
Exactly.
Absolutely brilliant.
And the tasks from that find their way into the weekly or monthly calendar. So if it's good enough to go on the plan, it's got to somewhere find a time block. And, that's one of the other things that I've found has been important is you actually have to schedule this stuff because otherwise it just becomes like an interesting idea that doesn't get done.
Exactly. So you write it on your to-do list or you put it in your calendar. You put it in Trello. You put it in Mondays. You put it in, there's a whole lot of other applications and out there services out there that provide all this. But at the end of the day, it's got to go into your diary so you know that that's the date that's in there. So you might put your due date in the diary. You also think, okay, well, the due date's in there, but that task is going to require blocks of my time to be able to use. I need to put those blocks in too because if I don't have them in, then I ain't going to meet the deadline.
No, it's interesting. The other thing that's been powerful in the client world has often been just a whiteboard or a magnetic board on the wall where it's up in front of a team. So people can see stuff that's been, manually written there. It's right in front of them. Because sometimes I find with the tech stuff, Darren, that it's sort of buried inside the machine and it's, you're not walking past it.
It is. And then, what ends up happening, Rob, is that some reason or another, the tech doesn't work quite the way we want it to. So that 1 hour block that I'm spending working on that particular task, I'm spending the first 40 minutes of that trying to work out why the cloud's not letting me do what it's supposed to do. And there goes my 1 hour. It's gone because I'm being distracted by this other stuff that's occupying my time. And that's just that's the excuse, isn't it? Oh, sorry, I couldn't get to that today because I had problems with my internet was down, whatever. that's where it all goes to shit.
Yeah, it almost goes back to the kind of one of those dog ate my homework type of conversations.
Yeah, and you write the note, you know, dear teacher, Rob's homework wasn't done this week because the dog ate it. What's the likelihood of that being accepted by the teacher? Probably high if you told the whole class at the time and circulated it that the dog ate your homework to set the scene. But we digress. We laugh and we digress.
So, you know, we've had a good round the grounds here in terms of some of the things that get in the way of people's accountability and some of the sort of ninja tips and techniques that will help them break into some more useful patterns. Have you got a couple of sort of stories about some of the high-performance leaders? What are some of the results and so on that have differentiated those people who have been able to adopt some of these disciplines?
It's really interesting to focus on quantifying those achievements by being more accountable. You know, those achievements are across the spectrum. They can be as simple as somebody who's, you know, has completed that project they needed to do by the due date. It was something as simple as being able to, get those job advertisements out when they needed to. Those things that people are trying to achieve vary, and they vary in magnitude. What can have a 10 million dollar increase to the bottom line is just as important to the business person who wants to make their Q3 number because their supplier's got an incentive for orders to get into a particular date. I've not tried to focus on what the quantifiable end result is for clients that I work with across the different industries that I work on. What's important is that they feel like their number one task of feeling overwhelmed has been removed. And they feel like it's being removed because they feel like they're sharing that workload with others. If they don't feel alone in this. I don't know how you quantify that in terms of dollar value at the end. But certainly it's been noticeable differences.
Well, it goes back to that simple evaluation of what's important to them.
It does. And you know, the stories of accountability. Can I tell you one more story?
I got a
quick one, just to show you how my road to accountability framework works in terms of the probability percentages we talked about. On the back cover of my book's an author photo, right? That author photo was taken in December last year during Melbourne's lockdown number two, I think we labelled it as. I need to have my author photo done. And I was planning on when I was going to get that author photo taken, and this was about the middle of the year. So I think we're talking about July. July to December, I had about 6 months in which I needed to get the photo taken. If we look at probability percentages, I had a 10% probability if I had an actual goal or an idea. So I needed to have that author photo taken by a certain date. My kids said to me, if I consciously decide that I'm going to do something, my probability goes to 25%. My kids said to me, Dad, you've got the COVID look happening. You put on all this weight. Your photo on your back of your book's going to look like it's going to look really bad. And it dawned on me then that they're absolutely right. So I consciously decided, nothing like the kids giving you a reality check. I consciously decided that I was going to lose about 5 kilos by the time my author photo was taken. So I had 6 months to do that. And most people would think, yeah, that's easy to lose 5 kilos within that 6 month period. My probability is at 25% if I consciously decided it. And I went, yes, I need to lose weight because, yeah, I do look like, you know, I do look like I need to lose weight. Author photo is really important. 40% probability when I was going to do it. The photo was taken in December. I decided that I want to lose the weight by cup day. That gave me a month up my sleeve in case I needed a bit of extra time, but I knew I needed to lose it from before cup day, which was the 6th of November last year. So I 40% probability I knew when, 50% probability of how I'm going to do it. I decided I wasn't going to, because we were in lockdown, I needed to do some more exercise. So what could I do? I jumped on Amazon, bought myself one of those little cross trainers, said I was going to jump on the cross trainer that every day and do some exercise. No booze during the week. I knew that's not can't be good for me, but I was liking a glass of wine every night after finished work, and being able to remove that alcohol made a big difference. 50% probability, because I had a plan on how I'm going to do it. Exercise, alcohol, I was going to cut down on the bread intake because that doesn't work for me very well. My probability goes to 65% if I commit to someone who I was going to do it. So I committed to my coach. We talked about the importance before of sharing it with as many people as possible. At that time, I was doing a weekly podcast, a weekly webcast, I should say, with Andrew Griffiths. I know you're well connected with Andrew, and that webcast was going out to 1,000 people. And I told 1,000 people in one of those episodes, "Hey, I've made a goal here. I'm going to lose COVID weight, COVID belly. I need to get rid of that because my book cover was happening." Nothing like committing to a group of people. 1,000 people at any one time is going to get you to complete your task. Because I was getting text messages and phone calls from people during the ensuing weeks to say, "How are you going with that, Darren? You're losing that weight. Where are you at?" Everybody was wanting me to succeed. And so I didn't see it as being, that I wasn't going to tell anybody because I didn't want, in case I failed, I just saw it as being an opportunity to succeed. I was able to turn that perspective around in my mind. And the fact that I had a commitment every week, I was going to speak to Andrew in those days, he was going to follow me up on that weight loss, to see my progress, to be my accountability coach for that task, what took me to a probability of 95%. Not only did I lose 5 kilos, and I know you're looking at that author photo now thinking, how good does this guy look, but I lost 10 kilos in the process, and that made a big difference. So these steps, quantifiable there, that losing 5 kilos or those 10 kilos for me was just as important as increasing my bottom line. It was a major commitment that I'd made. And the process of accountability works so easily.
And in that case, Darren, obviously a very specific, measurable, achievable goal, realistic for you to achieve, had a time frame attached to it.
Yeah.
So sort of passes, if you like, the SMART goal test of something that was doable.
Absolutely. It was attainable. It was measurable. It was specific. I needed to lose 5 kilos. It was relevant. It was totally connected to my why. I was invested in that. That was a photo of me. I wanted that photo of me to represent the best me there could be. And so I was absolutely committed to that end goal. And so SMART goals there being being time bound are absolutely spot on for that.
No, great story. And so that leads nicely, I guess, onto my last question, which is, given that bit of background from your own story around the book photo and so on, what's a challenge question that we can leave with our listeners to get them on that accountability journey of pushing this for themselves and for their own business?
Look, I would say that how likely are you to achieve your goals, your promises, your obligations or commitments alone? And to me, that is the crux of all this. It's accountability is having, you're accountable to people. We're responsible for things. You can't do it alone. Find someone who can hold you to account.
Yeah, well, I think that was in those metrics you talked about earlier, that was the big needle mover, wasn't it?
It was. It is. It still is. You can't achieve these things alone. You can't possibly have your plan, create your plan, decide when you're going to do it, commit to someone. You can't commit to someone if you're doing it alone. So it's all about having someone to do it with you. And try and make them not your life partner, if that's possible. You don't want the person holding you to account to be, your friend or your life partner. They're just not going to have that hard question, that hard conversation with you when they're going to need to. And we're humans. We all need that from time to time. Doesn't matter how accountable we are. We say we are. We think we are. but we just need to find someone who can do that.
Great point to leave our audience with, Darren. Really appreciated you taking the time out today to talk with us about your book. And so for those who don't yet have it, The Accountability Advantage, Play Your Best Game by Darren Finkelstein. Jump into that, and that's a great way to follow up on the conversation we've had today. Darren, really grateful to have you on the show. Thanks again for joining us.
Rob, it's my absolute pleasure. Cheers.
Thanks, mate.
You've been listening to the Propelling Performance podcast, the show which helps you drive the performance, growth and valuation of your business. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and a review and share your key takeaway. To get the show notes from today's episode, head to robertnankervis.com/podcast. Remember to sign up to receive an email to let you know when the next episode is released. Thanks for listening.